Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Well, folks, it is now or never. As a matter of fact, I can go through, and usually when I start these shows off, I actually start these shows off in, you know, providing a little bit of insight and providing a little bit of information regarding why it's now or never. But let's just go ahead and plow forward. And as you know, the show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org as well as ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. So we also want you to understand. So I was going to avoid saying something, but it kind of came to me today that, you know, maybe there's a reason why yours truly is focused on definitizing the Constitution and helping everybody understand just precisely how the Constitution has been defined and how it needs to be operated and so forth. One of the things that I did, you know, because when I use the term definitizing or to definitize the Constitution, it kind of falls into this space that people just have a hard time understanding. And so, believe it or not, there are things that the federal government does that within contract space. So I've spent a lot of time in contracts. I didn't necessarily deal directly with contract negotiations, all that stuff. I've gotten into involved in, you know, providing detailed information, technical information regarding contracts that I worked on and serviced. But the interesting thing is that when you look at an agency that claims, or when you know, the federal government claims to be this almighty, you know, perfect being, this perfect entity that, you know, has no fault, has no sin. The fact is, it's an evil being, and it is a hypocritic, or very hypocritic being. It's the hypocrisy, that's a better word. The hypocrisy abounds, because if you want to look up undefinitized contract actions, you'll actually start seeing how exactly how the government has gone down this path of trying to delineate for you and I exactly what, you know, especially in the contract space, what is acceptable, what isn't acceptable. And actually, I'll just give you how they kind of lay it out right here on this website. Undefinitized contract actions, in other words, anything that is being acted upon that is maybe within the contract, but it's not, the details of it aren't necessarily disclosed. So I'm just basically reading what it says. Undefinitized contract actions are those contract actions for which the contract terms, specifications, or price are not agreed upon before performance commences. Examples are letter contracts, you know, basic ordering amendments and provisions and so forth. So they actually get into, you know, how things are specified. So I want you to understand what I'm talking about, because we're going to hit this probably several times moving forward, because we're going to be getting into some little, I'll just say, ancillary issues that I will repeat. This is why we have to have a definitized contract, or a definitized constitution. And there's only one tribunal. There is only one body of parties, which are the states, who have the authority to definitize exactly what and how that was sold. If the states can agree, and this does not take any rocket science, and this is not any smoke and mirrors. If the states, as they go through the ratification debates and they read exactly how each line was defined by the Federalist, and the fact that this compact was ratified based on those terms and definitions, then it is a open and closed case. I was just jumping into closed. I also have to take a quick aside on a personal note. I know that I speak in sentence fragments a lot more lately, and it has everything to do with some medication I'm taking because of my health situation. And so it's like I'm trying to say three, sometimes four things at once. And it's really impossible to do that. It's kind of like driving with two cars in the same lane. You know, it just can't happen. What will happen is an accident. So anyway, as I try to process thoughts, I obviously have some accidents. And so I may be saying something, or I may have said something that either was, you know, not very coherent or might have offended somebody. And so if that's the case, I really apologize. I am doing everything I can to try to keep the balls in the air. And all these balls are, you know, what do we got to do? What are we doing? This is why we do this. All of those types of things. And the reason I've kind of came down this path and started going down, definitizing the Constitution, this academic approach, because the part of the obligatories right now are, as you know, the show is the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. So what caused me to take this, the first aside, and the second aside is, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for doing all of these, you know, incoherent things. And I really appreciate and want to thank you for your patience. But back to the first aside, as I look at what some of these other conservative entertainers are doing, as I see people in social media and in my little sphere, I see people that are looking at these big time names that are making millions of dollars. And I'm going, I don't have a problem with them making millions of dollars. What I have a problem with is the fact that they had opportunities. I mean, I've reached out to Glenn Beck. I've reached out to Bill O'Reilly. I've reached out to these folks and told them it's all about compliance. So this is what we need to do. And not one is even interested in what we need to do. And so my question it weighs on me. Why? If these people are really good people, then why? Why aren't they doing something more than what they're doing? Because all they're doing is really, I just say, the marketing for what I am telling you we need to do. In other words, are they really helping me? Are they hindering you? Or what the heck is going on, folks? All's I know, and this really comes down to how deceptive and how effective Lucifer or Satan is in deceiving people and in deceiving us and getting people to, you know, this is what we really need to do. I constantly can, you know, create checks on myself to make sure, one, I'm not going down the wrong rabbit holes or doing something that would compromise your trust, your faith in me, and trying to make it seem like, you know, oh, do as I say, not as I do. Because, you know, the elitists, these, and when I say elitists, I don't mean just the politicians, but all these people that are making all of this money, and technically it's all on us. I mean, they're making money off of us. You're buying their books, right? Are you buying Mark Levin's books? I mean, I was guilty of buying his books. And then I realized that Mark Levin is, you know, he wants to sell you his little, you know, what will benefit him in solving these solutions. There are some folks out there, you know, because I see these patriots with a Y. When I say patriots with a Y, these are people that are out there looking to get paid for what they're doing instead of really trying to solve the problem. And when I see people out there, when I actually see people standing on the stage and telling you that this is what we need to do, and then they have their fingers or hands involved in an education system or curriculum, and or they're working with organizations that drive people to, you know, pay and create relevance to the organizations, then how are they any different? How are they any different? How are they not a part of the problem? Technically, they are a part of the problem. And yet the stuff that they provide is very insightful. Again, I ask you, is the pieces of information, are their actions and what they are providing, is this being deceitful, disingenuous? Are they trying to really be genuine? Or are they kind of like that preacher that is experimenting or playing, you know, you in the audience, the parishioners, to try to get you to reach into your pocket and to contribute when that plate of shame goes around in front of you and says, oh, you know, are you not, you know, needing, you know, God's grace? Are you not needing forgiveness? And they're playing this And these conservative entertainers, everybody is doing this. The level of manipulation throughout, I think, our society is just abominable. I mean, we are in really the last days and desperate times. And folks, what I have been telling you about unorganized militias, about using petitions, about getting you involved, because bottom line, if you don't get involved, then you reap what you sow. And I truly believe that it doesn't take all of you. Let me correct this. It takes most of you to at least exert a little bit of effort, to at least say, we want our public servants to be held accountable. We want them to honor the Constitution and support it and defend it against enemies, foreign and domestic. Those are all reasonable expectations that every voter should have of those people who are serving in office, those people who raise their arm to the square and take that oath of office. Period. That's what we need to do. And it's not hard. All you got to do is sign petitions. If that's your little contribution, then get your butt over there and sign petitions, because at least you're adding your voice to this process to say, we demand compliance. It's all about that one little word, compliance. And so with that, when we come back, I'll get through the obligatories of my recommendations and those types of things. And then we will get into the comprehensive positions that we need to campaign on, that we need this movement to drive. This is really all about a movement, folks. And again, I'm not from the government, but I'm here to help, and we will be helping you. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me get through some of these obligatories. And believe me, these are not, a strenuous obligatory. They're well-deserved, and they are greatly appreciated, the fact that we can do these things, because it's good to see patriots getting involved and trying to at least help, and with their help, helping other good causes and so forth. So, and one of these days, when we actually get past this election, what I'll probably do is I'll reach out and talk to, these folks who we plug, and see if they would be willing to come on and talk about, one, what got them in the business, what they're doing, and more importantly, how did they actually contribute to you know, constitutional causes and so forth. So anywho, what we would like to go through is these two endorsements, because we really do the two. But before we do, I've got to remind you that if you have not looked at getting a subscription to the Wyoming Conservative Chronicle, you should. And the reason why is we want to have a conversation, hopefully by the end of the year, with the founder, the person who's doing this. And what I'd like to see done is I'd like to see every state start to go down this path. And as a matter of fact, I honestly believe I don't want necessarily government involved. We have to have a free press where it's not managed by the government. But the press must be regulated regarding whether it is being true, objective, and so forth. And the only way to do that is to actually create jury pools, if you want to call them press pools of the people, and force people to actually go through and look and identify what and how and so forth, so that we can actually start creating ratings for our press to actually let people know that these are things that you're reading right now, these are all propaganda mills. They do not deserve any type of support or tax breaks or anything. As a matter of fact, they should be taxed severely. They should be making, you know, their profits and their revenue and everything else should not be exempt or anything. And more importantly, because I think they're a scourge on society, they need to pay fees. I think propaganda mills need to actually pay a fee just so people understand, you know, it's kind of like that that little label that goes across tobacco or alcohol or what have you, just so you know that there's an excise tax. It's called a sin tax. And so if you're looking, you know, at your news and so forth, it would be nice to see that this particular newspaper, this particular TV channel, you know, has and is being assessed a sin tax, because it has nothing to do with providing you information and truth and all sides to the story so you can make the decisions. It is feeding you and indoctrinating you and manipulating you into a specific paradigm. So anyway, check out Wyoming Constitution or Conservative Chronicle. Now, Fortitude Financial Coaching with Gary Smith, go check them out if you're looking to get yourself in tune financially, if you're looking for success, if you're looking to actually get to that next level, or even just getting out of debt. He is a Dave Ramsey coach, certified, and check him out, Fortitude Financial Coaching. Fortunately, nowadays, all of this stuff can be done over the phone and virtually and what have you, and Gary Smith is a true patriot, highly endorsed. Check him out. The one and only other endorsement we're giving out today is with Stan Kluett and his RadioDustCovers.com. If you're looking to be able to cover equipment, as a matter of fact, my studio equipment, I should actually get a cover for it so that we can actually kind of have protection when I'm not recording and broadcasting. Because believe it or not, I don't broadcast 24/7, and I've got a lot of other things I do. And it would be probably good, and it would be, you know, because I cover a lot of other things. I should probably go down that path and do this. But that being said, let's move forward. As you know, we've got a comment line, 425-270-5416. And more importantly, there's a reason why we go through all of this content. There's a reason why we, you know, actually provide you with what we'll call the facts. And the reason why, my friends, is because reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. That's a premise I live by. And so I believe that if we go through the facts and then we start having the open and honest conversation and we have the same level of information, or at least we see things, you know, from the same types of perspectives. Now, when I teach you, when I say things about like American republicanism, I talk about this a lot. There is no hardcore evidence that this is exactly what they laid out. It really has more to do with my analysis and the byproduct of what they did and how things fell out. If you look at the Virginia plan in the Constitutional Convention, clearly they were setting up a federation. They were basically reducing the states to administrative functions only, that the central government was going to basically be the heart and soul of government and governing the people. Had they gone down this path, and I think Madison realized this after he started listening to everybody else, which is why he became an ardent defender of the Constitution that we have today. Because there's no doubt in my mind, going in, he had let's be clear. When Madison was realizing that this Confederacy was about to go belly up, he knew that we needed to do something. And so what he did was he created a plan. And then he went off and basically appealed to his Virginians. And George Washington was the one man that he needed to get into his camp. And so it took a while, but he finally convinced, by sending a letter to General Knox, General Knox convinced Washington to not worry about the Society of Cincinnati, because at that point in time, Washington was looking about joining, because he wanted to contribute to, something that was, of higher enlightenment and so forth. And Knox basically said, the nation needs you once again. You need to get involved in this. And so it was Knox, believe it or not, that actually helped, push, even though Madison and a lot of other people were making appeals to Washington, it was Knox that kind of helped him, turn his focus towards the nation and this Constitutional Convention. And as soon as people realized that George Washington was going to be sitting in that Constitutional Convention, everybody, their eyes all of a sudden shifted and go, this is important. This is important. Here's the man that saved us from Britain and won. And actually, he will tell you, if George Washington was alive today, he would tell you he did not save us. He was not that instrumental, that it was the Lord and his blessings that made it all happen. And so going into this convention, Madison had this plan of really creating a centralized federation that was going to have all these powers. Then the New Jersey plan basically maintained the exact same thing that we had with the Articles of Confederation. In other words, let's just do it this way. And everybody goes, well, that's what we're doing already, and it's not working. And so Roger Sherman brought forth the Connecticut Compromise, and he actually, there's no doubt in my mind, he was inspired equally by the divine hand of providence, looked at how we could mold into a federation and a confederation and create a hybrid, even though in the outcome of what they did, we are more of a confederation, but they did create a federation, and that federation did have political energies of being able to tax the people for it to do what was necessary that was delegated to them. So you have to understand, all of these little things that kind of went into creating this Constitution, and then understand this concept of American republicanism. American republicanism is not standard republicanism where the sovereigns, the people, are basically those who choose their representatives. Sherman, and in the Constitution, they changed and shifted this. They shifted American republicanism to incorporate sovereigns of lesser governments. In other words, when we, the people, institute a government, whether that be the county government or the state government, we institute that government, we delegate to it powers. And when we do so, it becomes sovereign over those few powers we delegate. This is why, my friends, they went into this, and as they went through this after the Sherman Compromise, they were very weary of the types of powers that they had to give the federal government. They wanted to make sure it had everything it needed to do these few things, and that was it. This is why the Bill of Rights was not necessary. More importantly, at that point in time, it was not necessary. The Bill of Rights and the need for a Bill of Rights really came forward later on as this nation started getting derailed and started going down so many wrong different paths that by that time, and this is the divine hand of providence, by that time it would have been too late to initiate or engage the states in getting them to behave well. I think the states would have been so far down this path of corruption that basically the 14th Amendment would not have been enough, and we probably would have lost the Union. So again, the divine hand of providence sees things that, we can't even fathom. But he knew we needed that, even though when you read anything in history, the Bill of Rights was never really a problem for the federal government in those that first century going into that Civil War. The real problem were the states. It was the states that were playing and doing shenanigans, which actually forced, in some respects, it forced the federal government to kind of step in and, you know, tell the states, hey, you can't be doing these things, because there were shenanigans that states, because the states had these cabals of corruption, and it was really hard to get away from that. So anyway, and I'm giving you this background because we're actually going to cover, you know, American Republicanism in a few topics in the next day or two or this week. And that's all going with and tied to definitizing the Constitution. But with all that, we've got a break, so we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so as this Constitutional Convention wrapped up and this new concept of giving and recognizing the sovereignty of the sub-element of government. So when we look at what they were doing, they were creating a national government, or a general government to serve the Confederation, not the Federation. And they didn't create that. Remember, they actually rejected a Federation. And so when these states ratified this Constitution, because they recognized how well-defined and denned the federal government was. Now, anybody will tell you that an experience or any academ in reading how government continues to aggrandize and aggrandize and aggrandize itself to a point where it basically turns itself into your master. And this is exactly what happens all the time. So when we look at how these states actually, after they ratified this Constitution, they were so impressed in the checks and balances within Congress that they changed their own state legislatures into into a bicameral legislative body. There were several states out of the original 13 that had unicameral legislative bodies. And so they went back to the drawing board and they completely reconfigured themselves. And they reconfigured themselves based on the counties of the state, recognizing that the counties were the local government where local laws would be made and inflicted. This is where towns actually started, you know, making prostitution illegal, and counties going down that path as well, and creating blue laws. And then states started creating blue laws. And many states actually did have blue laws that, you know, was basically inflicting this, you know, this paradigm upon the entire state. But nevertheless, the fact is that we have sovereigns in the capacity at the county level, and we had sovereigns in the capacity at the state level. And the intent is something that's interesting because it was about suffrage. Which, what is suffrage? Your right to vote for your representation, or you having the ability to vote to create a check or balance within a political system. And when we look at the states and their suffrage in the Senate, the states basically aligned themselves to grant suffrage for the counties. They didn't recognize population centers. At that point in time, cities were kind of big, but they had these little boroughs or dens or what have you. And I'm here to tell you, my friends, that when we really look at this, you know, this American republicanism, it actually reeks highly of the fact that there's this divine order that keeps, you know, one side in the legislative body, in a true bicameral legislative body. It keeps one side from becoming too invasive or too over-controlling or too overbearing. So we're going to get into this when we hit the 17th Amendment. I just wanted to give you this background again on American republicanism. Because if you really do the research, you will recognize that what we did here in America has never been done. Even to this day, nobody has recognized this. There is not a state out there that provides suffrage. And, you know, and when I say a state, a nation out there that provides suffrage throughout its political structure, all the way down from the national constitution to the state constitution, and how states actually did this. Now, when all of the new states started coming in, and this is where you can go into the Enabling Acts. The Enabling Acts actually support this. So as you start looking at all the source documents, all of these source documents actually support the paradigm. So, you know, in other words, help defend what I am telling you. So I'm not just some crazy lunatic on some, you know, outward fringe or anything like that. We're really telling you exactly how and what they were trying to do and the reasons behind all of that. So anyway, what we last covered last week was we covered, and where are we? So we covered the invasion, and we talked all about the invasion. And actually, one of the things we pointed out before we went to break and ended the show is we pointed out that migrations were recognized as an invasion. And I say that because we actually saw this happen here in America, because New Amsterdam, the colony of the Dutch, was actually invaded by the Britons from all the other colonies here. They migrated in there, and they've literally took that colony away from France, or away from Dutch, or the Holland. Sorry, trying to speak too fast. So they took the colony away from Holland, and it became an English colony. And so understanding how you can be overran and overtaken and overpowered does not mean that an invasion is a military act. As a matter of fact, if it was a military act, it would be, you know, a military incursion, or they would have at least clarified that. But they actually talked about, and Madison actually used those words, that they, you know, you could be invaded and overcome, not by military. He doesn't even mention military. And so the petition that actually needs to be out there, we need to put this into, and this is actually going into the petition that's coming out of Missouri underneath Paul Venable's campaign, is basically going to do this. It's going to be demanding an immediate removal of all representatives and senators of Congress who have not called for the deployment of the militia to the southern borders, period. That is their criteria. That is what they need to be doing. If they're supporting the Constitution, if they're fulfilling their oath of office, then they are actually on the floor and throughout their meetings and everything else, whenever they talk about immigration, you know, this, what is going on, if they're not putting it in context as it is an invasion and that we need to deploy the militia to repel this, then they are failing, and they're deliberately failing. In addition, any and all jurists, any and all judges who have tried cases or overseen cases, and over the course of their career, not just right now, we're talking about over the course of their career since this invasion has really been kicking, and these cases have actually dealt with immigration or dealt with invaders, and they have failed to actually call out the legislative bodies that they need to deploy the militia. And the fact that these invaders are here in this country is a violation of the Constitution by not protecting the states from an invasion. So therefore, they need to be removed. And furthermore, any and all who served in the executive branch who have failed to call upon Congress to call up the militia, and I'm talking about for the last 40 years plus, anybody who has not called upon Congress to call forth the militia to repel this invasion forthwith must be removed as well. And as a matter of fact, anybody who is in government service that is receiving emoluments that actually had this cup passed by them and they drank from this cup and failed to do their job, in other words, former presidents, you know, I'll say this. Trump may have been ignorant. He at least tried to build that wall. And all he did was fight with an obstinate Congress who has been deliberately ignoring and rebelling against the Constitution. Folks, this is the epitome of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. This is the epitome of this. In other words, they are actually committing rebellion against the Constitution because they are not calling forth the militia to repel this invasion. So therefore, anybody who's retired, executive, judiciary, or Congress, who has had this cup passed by them, in other words, Chaffetz, you know, this Utah representative, or even Hatch, or I don't care how conservative these folks are, if while they served, they did not stand on a consistent platform, at least I'll even give them once. Let's play, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah here. And let's play Lot is begging for forgiveness to don't destroy all of these people. And I would say, okay, you know, show me of these people who have constantly done this, who have constantly, you know, asked for the deployment of the militia. Well, you probably won't find anybody because there's nobody that's been doing that. Okay, and then Lot, you know, comes back and says, well, come on, I can't find anybody that meets that criteria. And they said, okay, then give me all the people that at least mentioned it once, just once, and we will not destroy them. Folks, not once. Not once has it come from Cruz's mouth. Not once has it come from, at least, as far, let these guys prove it. Let them go prove to me, because every time I hear them talking about it, they've never put it in context of a invasion and that we must deploy the militia in accordance to the Constitution. Therefore, anybody that is receiving any emoluments, any retirement pay, any kind of benefits, any kind of access, former presidents included, and former presidents need to be impeached for this. I'm just telling you, all presidents must be impeached for this, which means that they lose their access to Secret Service, all of this stuff. Every single person, if they have not even once done what they were supposed to do by calling this an invasion, because I think there was a talk when Senator Obama actually did call it invasion, but he didn't call for the deployment of the of the militia. And that's the key thing, folks. If they're not supporting the Constitution, I mean, he may have used the right vernacular once or twice. And there may be other people who kind of say, wow, this is kind of like an invasion. But he never once, and while he was president, he actually did everything he could to help enable this invasion to continue. And that can be proven. And so my friends, all of them have to go. Unless you can pull up, unless you can give to me any evidence that, you know, supports this idea that they at least once did it right. They at least went and appealed to Congress and proved right there in the Constitution of Article 4, Section 4, as well as Article 1, Section 8, this is what it is and this is what we have to do. That's, you know, open and shut. Let's go do this. But nobody did. And we'll be right back after these two promos.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
I'm sorry, I just happened to notice a little meme out there, and I'm taking aside on some levity here. Somebody actually has a meme going that says, "Raising the price of gas will never get me to buy an electric car. I will buy a donkey, and I will name him Brandon." Anyway, so just so we can move forward, I think it's really important, folks, that we hold these folks accountable. They don't want to be held accountable, and they've actually convinced us that what we, our only option in voicing our opinion is to take uncivil behavior and go out and do things in the street. They know law-abiding citizens have a real problem with doing, what these Bolsheviks are doing in our streets. But these kids who, believe they're, and I just actually used this term before, indestructible. These kids that truly believe they're indestructible, that nothing can hurt them. And so, they've got them out there doing these things. And, who wants to act? Can you blame these kids because they've been indoctrinated? Most of these kids have never really made the rational connections of what they're doing, but they and or why. In contrast to what the truth is. In other words, these kids have just been programmed. They've been weaponized. I've been saying this for the longest time, that our school system is weaponizing our children. And as a matter of fact, don't be surprised, as we look at this shooter in Texas, this transvestite or this trans, whatever, this person, as we look at the facts and details, you will be appalled by all of the truth when you really start looking at the macro view. And so, anyway, let's kind of move forward. But this is actually already in that petition. And what we want to do is we want to make sure that you get this petition. So GR has to actually go in and close out these petitions, because this petition needs to be done and I need to get the other one done. And so that they'll all be out on the Benton County website for Senator Paul Venable, so that you can start getting, these access to these as well. So anyway, and as a matter of fact, I'm working with lots of other people, but bottom line is these are things that he's directly supporting and he wants to get these things going. Folks, you need to support Paul Venable for his campaign because it's not a campaign for Missouri. Even though his campaign website is You Win Missouri, I believe this is You Win America. When you really look at getting back to the Constitution and getting compliance of the Constitution, truly, folks, you win. Your liberties will be restored. You will be back and empowered, and your government will be denned and constrained to the enumerated powers, and they will govern you as we have directed them to, instead of allowing people to actually, you know, commit this insurrection, which is something we're going to be getting into right now. Because what is an insurrection? Well, so let's get into what the Constitution says. Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 14 states, the Congress shall have the power to provide for calling forth a militia to execute the laws of the Union and to suppress insurrections and repel invasions. We were just talking about invasions. Well, what about insurrections? And we also have told you, we've read through the 14th Amendment, that nobody who basically has taken an oath of office to support the Constitution, as a matter of fact, I'm going to use the plain language of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. This is GR's interpretation for you. You're more than welcome to go through it and tell me how I might be missing something. I think we got it here. I think we've nailed it. No person shall be a public servant who, having previously taken an oath as a public servant to support the Constitution, who then engaged in violating the Constitution, insurrection, or rebellion against the Constitution, or given aid or comfort to the enemies of the Constitution. If so, they are to be immediately removed and banned for life from public service. But Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of each house, remove such disability. And so what we're talking about here, folks, is pretty plain and simple. We're basically laying out this, you know, this fact that if you are violating the Constitution and you're doing things that are destructive to the Constitution, destructive to the law of the land, you know what? It doesn't have to be the whole law. You don't have to have an insurrection against every little facet of the Constitution, just one, such as, you know, your Second Amendment rights or actually killing people by abortion, by using the federal government to justify something that it has no jurisdiction in doing and then inflicting that upon people. That in itself is an insurrection. And my friends, they are in this insurrection space. If you look at this three-dimensional battlefield, it is crazy. They are coming at us from every side. This is why we need to actually call them out for being insurrectionists and come after them. We need to roll up that Constitution so it's a nice and big round roll, put some tape on it, and then pour some concrete in it, and then let's go to work and hit some public servants in the head. I'm sorry. I'm not actually calling you to go out and be violent. But I'm saying we need to use the Constitution as a weapon to hold them accountable. And that's what that's why the First Amendment and the right of petition for the redress of grievances exists. It is the one weapon that was given to us that goes all the way back to the Magna Carta. It actually goes all the way back to the creation of the importance of petitioning and identifying and holding accountable. In other words, if God created this, you know, this mechanism so that we could call upon him, and when he basically says, if you live my commandments, if you're worthy, call upon me and petition me, I will bless you. Well, I mean, and if it be his will, I mean, there's many times where he's not giving you the blessings you needed because that wasn't his will. And so he does have that little check there, that little omnipotent position that, you know, it's got to be his will. It's got to be within that. But 9 times out of 10, when it comes to knowledge or when you're seeking some information or seeking understanding, I mean, he gives liberally. He does give liberally. But here's the interesting thing, that we are the sovereigns in the relationship with our public servants. In other words, they're only sovereign over the few things we've delegated to them. And we have the power to remove them, hold them accountable, just like he does. He's created a system that's kind of got us walking down a path of like him, where we actually have all the power in this system. And this First Amendment petition is precisely that petition, where he can come, where he can come to you and petition you to do something or inflict punishment upon you. We have the same power. So I wanted to make this context for you, that the relationship between us and our government is reversed from you and God. In other words, we are, or you are, the omnipotent that can hold these people accountable. And by basically, you know, vexing them, by, you know, striking them, rebuking and or chastising, we do that by not voting them back in the office or actually removing them. And that's what Section 3 of the 14th Amendment does. And that's what First Amendment petitions can do, and demand that Section 3 be applied to our public servants. Our nation was built upon principles of civility, and uncivil behavior was not tolerated, which is why public protests were and are against the law. It's interesting because I have this conversation with constitutionalists all the time, and they say, well, what about our right to assemble and our right to associate? Absolutely. But those things that we're talking about, rights of assembly, do not trump your ability to get out into the street and block cars trying to get to work or trying to go shopping or trying to engage in commerce. Everybody has a right of commerce and a right to survive and a right to, you know, make their life better in the pursuit of happiness. And when you start denying other people their rights, then that's when we've crossed the line. Then, you know, the next comment or the next perspective is this. Well, folks, what about this? What about if, we use civil disobedience? My point is, and I've got to be quick to saying this, you have to use the civil process first. If you want God to be on your side, if you want him, the omnipotent, or the ultimate sovereign, and he gave us this system, then use the system, and he will bless us by using the system that he gave us. And that system is the First Amendment petition. If you have not petitioned and you go straight to civil disobedience, like you see these thugs and these Bolsheviks out in our street, then there should be no pity for them. We should actually be holding them fully accountable. But we understand, and we know that we actually have a mechanism, and we need to start using it, and we need to have a little bit of patience and forbearing. And my friends, what I'm giving you by using these First Amendment petitions and creating this laundry list of marketing and campaign, this is a 2-year strategy to 4-year strategy in beginning to remove every public servant at your state and county level. We got to focus on the county first. But we can also, at the same time, we can aim our sights and guns at our state-level people as well. Because when we really start pushing this over 2 years' time, I believe it is reasonable for you to expect that you can actually remove all of your state, you know, unconstitutional tyrants out there that are in red counties, where enough people that love the Constitution can actually have an impact and effect by removing them. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.